Learn from today's most innovative brands and observe how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Welcome to the Brand Lab series from AE Marketing Group. Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Piles alongside my guest, Brian Walker, and we are excited to have you with us for episode 35 of the Brand Lab series podcast, broadcasting from 1871 Chicago, where each Tuesday we explore today's most innovative brands alongside today's most insightful executives and entrepreneurs. This week we are talking managing rapid growth with Inc. 5000 entrepreneur Brian Walker. And with that said, let's enter the Brand Lab. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Natalie.
Welcome to your own show.
I know, this is crazy. Here we've done 35 episodes. We've had some incredible guests on, and I'm honored that not once but twice now you've pushed me out of my comfort zone to say, hey, stop asking the questions and occasionally answer a few. So
yeah, I've been asking you to do this for about 20 episodes.
I know. In fact, it's funny because one of my favorite parts of a recent episode we had with the Parker Gale co-founders was when you asked them, and you were so giddy about it too, knowing that I had been a guest on their private equity podcast. You were like, what's it like to have Brian on? And I had no idea what they were going to say, because obviously we were interviewing them that day. But that was a great question. And I was kind of flattered by what Jim Milbury said. You know, he called me the restrained tornado. So it's funny to be here on this side of of the desk, and certainly happy to talk about managing rapid growth and everything that's been transpiring over the last several years for AE Marketing Group.
Yeah, you've got a great story, a really great story. You started AE Marketing Group with no customers and have since experienced rapid growth, even 22 straight quarters of profitability. You were named a Goldman Sachs 10K and an Inc. 5000 company. You're an 1871 Chicago company and Forbes Agency Council member and more. So come on, what's your secret to creating this rapid growth in AE Marketing Group?
You know, I think some of it, if I'm being honest, is a little bit of luck. But I will say, I think our success is really built on three primary things. I think it's our vision. I think it's our purpose. And I think it's speed. You know, on the vision side, I think we believe that together we can build better brands. And that means looking at brand beyond just the traditional marketing. We've always looked at brand as a business function first. And that has to really transcend every aspect of your organization, both internally as well as externally. I know that that's something that Jonathan Kapolsky from Deloitte talked about in a prior episode. It's something that we really believe in. On the purpose side, I think it's always been our mission, believing that doing good for the community makes for good business. And since 2011, we have helped close to 30 nonprofits, not just here in Chicago, but around the country, even in Central America and over in Africa. And I think that really kind of keeps us grounded as a team. And then finally, like I said, speed. So it's unfortunate, but it's a necessary reality today that the world moves very fast. And that's just what our market demands. Competition is too fierce. Consumer attention spans are too short. And while moving fast certainly can be bumpy, and it has been bumpy, it really forces you to stay focused.
I kind of get the feeling you're making it sound easy. And I know that it is not easy in this market, in particular where you are. So what do you think your greatest challenge has been?
Yes, it certainly sounds glamorous, and it has been an incredible journey thus far, but it does come with a lot of challenges. You know, I think one of the greatest things for me personally is it's so hard for me to turn my business brain off. Do you remember when Think Circa's Abby Ross was on? I think it was episode 21.
Yeah.
She talked a lot about that struggle too as a co-founder in a very fast-growing ed tech startup. And that's something that I share with Abby, like this, how do you turn your brain off, or how do you find a way to essentially find yourself? And there are certainly days, and sometimes those days turned into weeks, where I feel like I lose myself a little bit because I'm always focusing on the business. And how do I turn that off? And that's been a real challenge. I think, you know, balance is a struggle for entrepreneurs. I know it's almost become a cliche and there's articles written all over the place about that. But until you've lived in the world, I think it really is true. I mean, I know you know because we had a great episode a while back with our kids on. And, you know, I do feel guilty that I miss a little bit more of Vanette and Edmund's childhood than I would like. I like to hope that this is for the big picture and end game for them. But there are things that I miss there. And then finally, you know, my job requires a lot of travel. And while I love to travel, and I don't know if you know this about me, Natalie, but I'm petrified to fly, actually.
Oh, yeah. I did know that, actually.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, in the last 4 weeks, I've been in Texas and New York and Miami and South Carolina and Maryland and Wisconsin. So I've been all over the place. And I don't love being on airplanes, but it's a necessary part of my job. And it's a challenge that I kind of have to deal with.
Well, and I think they say parents who, you know, face that same challenge, they end up spending a lot more quality time with their kids than maybe the average parent who doesn't travel a lot. So I don't want you to feel too guilty about that. I'm sure you're a very good father, and I know you really care about your kids and your family. But that is hard when your company is so demanding and when your growth is, you know, just crazy like it's been for you. I'm sure you don't get much sleep.
No, I don't. And I've promised myself that I can't keep this pace for more than 10 more years.
Because 10 years.
Brian. Yeah.
No, you can't. Well, I think you should revisit that figure.
Yeah. Well, and especially you forget, I think I have 10 more years of age on you. So I'm like, I can't be doing this when I'm crossing. Yeah, well, yeah, but, so I have tried occasionally to break away and find some time. And I think one of the other things that's hard about balance is you do get, and I appreciate your kind words, because I do think you kind of then guilt yourself into certain things where, okay, so if I do turn off my business hat, it's got to be game on as a parent. It's got to be game on, you know, with your partner or whoever. And I think the challenge is that you have to sometimes also selfishly say, it's okay to have me time. And, you know, I spent a couple of weeks, something I never thought I would have done. I spent a couple of weeks all by myself in Africa, where I didn't have to worry about anything. And I really tried to kind of find myself. I did a similar trip last year to Europe. Mm. And you know, I try to find a few of these moments at least where I can step away from everything. And I know it makes me better. But at sometimes it might come across as being selfish, but it's one of the ways I know how to balance it.
Well, no, and I bet you afford your wife that same experience too, so that you can both be the best you can be. I think that's actually really good advice for people to take that time for themselves. So that's interesting to know you've done that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So back to the beginning days of AE Marketing Group. Did you take any venture or equity funding back in the day?
I didn't. And I think I had a couple of reasons why I didn't do that. I think first and foremost, I have a real problem with debt. I always have. I've seen debt crush some family. I've seen it impact some friends. And I'm always averse to taking on capital that you may or may not need. I'm one of these crazy people that pays off their credit card every single month. You know, I'm sure my credit score would actually be better if I floated my money a little bit more. But, you know, I don't like having debt. And early on, you know, I didn't even think about the idea of venture funding or, you know, even a bank loan or something, because I was so focused on getting traction with the business. And I knew if I needed to go find some funding sources, if I didn't have that traction, if we couldn't show that, you know, the market was responding to what AE Marketing Group could offer and we were getting revenue in, you know, they probably would not, you know, give me a loan, and VC certainly wouldn't have given me the time of day. So I didn't want to dilute something that I didn't think had a chance to grow yet. So a few years back, we had already had a few million dollars in revenue. And then at that point, I went to a bank to open up a credit line. And I did that because I never wanted to have to go to a bank or any funding source to ask for money, maybe when we needed it the most. To me, I saw that as a position of weakness. So I went to at least get a credit line when we were financially strong so that I knew I always had that in my back pocket as well. And then here we are, almost 6 years into the company. Would I ever be willing now to raise some money? You know, certainly it's something I might consider now, especially if it could help, again, continue our explosive growth, because I think a smaller percentage of a top line number may be better than a larger percentage now of a bottom line number.
Oh, okay. Can you explain that a little bit more for people like me who don't know what that means?
Yeah. Well, as you alluded to, and it's something I'm super proud of, and I know is frankly almost unheard of in a lot of the startups that I know here at 1871 and the Goldman Sachs programs that I've been in. We've had this amazing streak of profitability. But to me, I always focus first on the top line, because I tell people all the time, and as you know, I mentor small businesses and entrepreneur startups too, is I say, hey, always remember that revenue is like the fuel for your car. If you don't have fuel in your car, it's not going to run. So sales is really everything about, you know, growth. And that's where top line number comes from. How much revenue is your company generating? You know, here we are coming up on the close of Q4, and we might have more top line revenue in this 3 month period than we've ever had in any quarter in the 6 year history of the company. And not only does that help the bottom line, which is the ultimate profit, but that gives us the ability to hire more. It gives us the ability to do more. It gives us the ability to give more. You know, we're about to have our annual giving week where we support a number of nonprofits and charities. And we can do that because we have profit, but without all that top line revenue, we wouldn't even have that to be able to do. So I'm always focused on the top line revenue in terms of growth.
Now, what scares you about growing AE?
Oh, boy. Well, like we joked earlier, I don't sleep much. And sometimes I don't sleep because I'm thinking about the things that do scare me. But I would say probably the biggest thing is growth and scale are not the same. If you remember, we talked to Context Media's Matt Kuzma about that back in episode 24. You know, to me, it scares me because to get the scale right, you have to make sure you have the right people and process in place. And that's going to be ultimately key to delivering strong customer value and to kind of continue to stay ahead of our industry curve. And, you know, I'm adamant first and foremost about delivering strong customer value, because that's what's going to affect the revenue number. And that requires the process and the people.
Yeah. So how do you manage your talent then with such a fast moving organization?
Well, it's interesting because I get asked that question quite a bit, and a variance of forms. But, you know, we have a core team that's not as big as I think people would think based upon what we're able to do. But our core team is really nimble, and everyone that's part of that core team has a strong entrepreneurial mindset. We think in terms of business before marketing, and then we scale our teams up or down based upon some of the unique needs that each customer might have. You know, prior to starting AE Marketing Group, I spent almost 10 years in agencies, and it was always a challenge for them to manage overhead, and they were always trying to staff people on different pieces of business, whether or not those customers actually needed it or not. there was a lot of waste, a lot of overhead, and we did not want to set ourselves up for that type of mindset because we saw that customers are very different. I talked about one of, I think, our key strengths to how we've been able to grow so quickly, and I think that's speed. It's an absolute advantage today, and we look for people who can work fast. We need people that can work outside of silos, so they need to be able to wear different hats. They need to not be afraid to fail, because we all do. I do. I want people that are willing to admit that they don't know what they don't know. The thing that I hate more is when people say that they know something or they feel confident in something instead of just saying, hey, I don't understand. They need to be able to operate in a little bit of ambiguity because, you know, we're in a very fast changing industry. Many of our customers are in very fast changing industries. So it's not going to be a simple plug and play. So those are some of the ways that we would manage growth.
Okay. So can I ask you a question then?
Of course.
You mentioned failure. So amid all of this tremendous success, there has to have been a failure or two along the way. Are you willing to share maybe one of those experiences?
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm being honest, and I think you know me to be a straight shooter, online yes. or offline, you know, failure is constant. But I think one of the things that is so interesting about the world that we live in now, and obviously, you know, we record each week here at 1871, which is the largest business and tech incubator in North America. You know, you don't hear as much about the failure. Yeah, you hear people talk about fail fast. And again, it's become such a cliche, but people don't really talk about it or admit it because, you know, the success is what's sexy and the success is what people all want to hear about. So yes, we've had a lot of success. Sometimes I pinch myself and say, how the hell did all this happen in such a short period of time? But there's been absolute failure. I mean, I think a lot about our early years, for example. I selected people that I knew or were within a network of people that I knew to carry out important roles or responsibilities within the company. And soon it became clear that some of our customers' needs were far greater than those individual skill sets. And that gets hard when you have personal relationships and then there's the work side. And, you know, there were people that just were not good enough to deliver the type of experience that I demanded for our customers, but more importantly, what our customers needed from us. And so that was hard. That strained some relationships. When I mentor startups and entrepreneurs, I tell them be very careful when you're working with friends and colleagues. You know, be very careful to not seek out advice from friends and family because they're generally going to tell you what you want to hear. Those were some hard lessons early on. Something that we're still struggling with a bit, which is so ironic, is a marketer. You know, we did little to market AE Marketing Group. You know, we were so focused on building business and more importantly, our customers' brands that, you know, we kind of forgot to promote our own. You know, thankfully, the recognition now by Inc. Magazine, Goldman Sachs, Forbes, the Insight Innovation Exchange, and more is starting to fuel that momentum. So we are starting to get more notice than we ever have before, but that's certainly handicapped us a bit. We were talking about customer experience and employee advocacy 6 years ago. We were launching co-creation over 4 years ago. So we've always been ahead of where most people are in the industry, and our customers know that, and that's what they love about us. But the problem is the general marketplace does not. I mean, we talked in a prior episode about this massive new employee campaign we did for one of our customers. It's unlike anything that most people have ever seen in the industry. But because we're not that well known yet, it's not getting some of the buzz that some of the other people get. So, you know, I think being able to market your own brand has been a big challenge. And if I'm being honest, it's kind of been a big failure. And that kind of stops with me. But I think we're making gains now. It's going to be a big part of our 2017 push.
So back to your comment on vision, why is it important to build brands beyond just marketing? I mean, people are always talking about marketing, but talk to me more about building brands.
Yeah, it's funny. And building off your last question too, it's funny. I sometimes have made the joke that maybe if I started the company again, I'm not sure I would have marketing in the title. I certainly would have AE because that's Annette and Edmund, my two kids. But to me, marketing is just one component of brand. And when you think about the rise of the empowered consumer today, when you think about how rapid technology is changing, it's made anyone with a smartphone, a critic, an author, a journalist, a photographer, and more. The brand power balance has really shifted to consumers. And even if you're in the B2B space, it's shifted to, you know, the consumers of your products or your services. And advertising alone just cannot help your brand grow. At the end of the day, I don't think anyone cares about how creative an ad is if they go to consume your product and it's not good. If they try to use your service and it's poor. If they have an interaction with your employee and that employee is uninformed, not helpful, maybe rude, nobody cares about the marketing at that point. So what we really do is we help organizations think about brand as so much bigger than marketing. To me, and again, I know that it's easier said than done, but the marketing component is the easiest part of the brand. But if you can, but you have to get all those other pieces in place first. And if you do, and you can deliver on what your marketing message says, you're going to be a very strong brand. And when you think about the brands that most consumers are fanatical about, that have huge loyalty or have emotional connection to, it's because their brand is so much bigger than just whatever marketing or ad campaign you see on TV is.
So what are maybe two or three things that companies can do then to fuel that if they're wanting to count themselves among those star players?
I think one of the biggest things is always remember the problem that your company is trying to solve, and keep the brand focus on that and how that can help solve and drive market value. So that would be one. Two, and I know it sounds silly, but keep it simple. I mean, I know that that sounds easy, but it's not. I mean, companies are made up of people. My company is made up of people. And we, by human nature, tend to sometimes overcomplicate things. And some of the industries that we work in, healthcare, financial services, they can be very complex. So we are always trying to say, keep it simple. Keep it in a way that people can understand. And then I'd say maybe one or two other things that pop out at me a lot is there's so much talk now about marketing is so omni-channel. You know, there's so many different areas that you can market in, and you have to be like this jack of all trades. And I think that's really poor advice. To me, I think you should really focus on the two or three channels that most of the people that are impacted by the problem that your business solves consumes. And really focus in on those two or three areas and do those really well. That's such a far greater use of resources and marketing effectiveness. And then the last thing, which is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine and has been my whole career, is when you are going to execute the creative side of your marketing, don't make it look like everyone else. It's so easy to fall into this trap. I think about industries like healthcare. I think about industries like retail. Consumers are so cluttered and inundated with messages today that it's so easy to do stuff that looks like everyone else. And that's not going to create a good point of difference. And you're not going to really break through with those customers or consumers. And you're not going to get that brand growth.
It's a little sobering, but true. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up with a little bit of a speed round. How do you feel about that?
Oh, you've been dying to get me on the speed round.
I know, I finally have an opportunity.
You know, it's funny. I've occasionally, as you know, we've put a few of our guests in the speed round, and some of them respond well, and then others are hilarious because they tell the most insightful stories throughout their interviews on our shows, and then you get them into a speed round, and then they just freeze up. So I have to sit in the hot seat now. Go.
You have not seen these questions before.
Uh-oh.
Okay, what's the biggest thing that would surprise people about Brian Walker?
You're going to laugh because I know you kind of know me, but you know I love to talk, but I'm actually incredibly shy in private.
No.
I'm more of an introvert than anybody would ever realize. I have a big network. I'm super comfortable talking in front of huge crowds, especially about things I'm passionate about, you know, business, philanthropy, branding, and more. But I don't have a ton of very close relationships. So I'm far more shy than I think anybody would ever realize.
Okay. Next question. What is one thing you will never do?
Oh, boy, never do. You do ask good questions. Something that I would never do, I would never bungee jump. I would never skydive, and I would never scuba dive.
Great. Okay. Let's see. What's the last song you listened to? And no lying.
The last song I listened to with no lying. I don't know if you'll get a kick out of this or not, but it was in my car with my kids in the back. Every time they're in my car, they're adamant that I put on Kids Bop radio. which I want to like drive off the side of the road when they ask for that. But a song called Stressed Out.
Oh, I love that.
Well, you might love it, but have you heard the Kids Bop version of Stressed Out?
No.
Okay. You know, it's so funny because I give Kids Bop credit because they've taken all these popular pop songs, but then they have these poor, you know, prepubescent tweens or teens trying to sing all these songs. And what's funny is occasionally they even have to actually edit what some of the lyrics are.
Sure.
But I'm just like, these singers are terrible. And, you know, no offense to the Kids Bop singers or their moms and dads that might be listening, but my kids are adamant that when they're in my car, Kids Bop, you know, turn to channel 77 on Sirius XM. So unfortunately, I hear a lot more of that than I would like. So you asked me an honest question, and that was the last song that I listened to.
All right. Awesome. I think people are really getting to paint a picture now of you. Next question. Who is your favorite character from the TV show Friends?
Oh, Friends. Let's see. You know, it's funny how when I watch Friends back in the day, you know, you kind of really like it and you kind of try to identify with all of them in one form or another. And then now many years later, you're kind of like, huh, I don't know. But I would say probably at the time, I would have to say Ross, because he kind of meant well. He was trying to be the glue to hold some of the friends together over certain times. Occasionally, he was a little socially awkward. And at least way back then, which is almost 20 years ago now, and I was much younger, you know, I could see a few of my qualities and maybe in him. So
nice. Nice answer. He's a good guy. Okay, let's see. What is the best gift you've ever received?
That's a good question, too. An interesting story. When I was very, very young, my parents gave me a stuffed animal dog, and he was in a train conductor's outfit, and I called him Engine Buddy. And I probably had, so I'm 43 now, and I've probably had Engine Buddy since I was 3 years old. And on stormy, scary nights or nights when my dad would travel or I would have nightmares, I slept with this stuffed animal almost every night when I was very young. And years and years later, somehow my parents found this in storage and they gave it to me. And he was a little raggedy and a little beat up. And I don't know what would have possessed me to think that putting him in a washing machine on a delicate cycle would have cleaned him up. But what it actually did was shredded him to pieces. And I almost shed a tear about that. And I felt so bad because this thing had meant so much to me. And now as a parent, I thought about that. So I didn't know what to do. And I put him in a little box. And then on my 40th birthday, my wife had found a hospital. I didn't know that these existed for stuffed animals. And unbeknownst to me, she had taken the engine buddy and they completely repaired him. They completely restuffed him. They completely put him back almost as good as new. And I unexpectedly was given that. And something that, you know, clearly doesn't cost a lot of money. And I'm a very fortunate person and I live a really good life. So to get something like that, that had meant so much to me as a kid, was really a great gift. And I know you know Annette, my oldest daughter. And as we've talked about, I travel a lot. And whenever I travel, she takes Engine Buddy. And I recently got back very late one night from a trip and I went into her bedroom to make sure she was okay. And she had Engine Buddy inside a Our Generation doll bed right next to her, all tucked in at night. And it was a really sweet moment.
I think we should end it on that note. Thanks for sharing that, Brian.
Yeah, those were some good questions and they weren't nearly as hard as I thought. I think one of these days, if we ever have a guest cancel on us, we're going to just do a Natalie versus Brian speed round question where anything and everything's on the table. Maybe we'll bring Anna in and she can even mix it up too.
Oh my gosh, that'd be, well, let's just do it. It'll be our little AE Brand Lab series podcast Christmas party.
Maybe, yeah. So thank you for having me on my own show. I know now I know why you're such a great co-host, because you ask good questions.
Jeez, thank you. Thanks very much. All right. Well, that just about wraps up episode 35 of this week's Brand Lab Series podcast. I'd like to thank our guest, Brian Walker, for joining us today. And I want to thank our listeners also for joining us in the Brand Lab and to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands, as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Until next time.
Hi, this is Brian Walker, CEO of AE Marketing Group. You're listening to the Brand Lab Series podcast. To learn more about AE Marketing Group, visit aemarketinggroup.com. You can listen to this and future episodes of the Brand Lab Series podcast in iTunes and Google Play. If you have any questions about the show, have some ideas for future topics, or would like to participate on the show, send us an email at info@brandlabseries.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter @BrandLabSeries.